Welcome to Work in Progress, a podcast hosted by the Art Gallery of Great Victoria, also known as the AGGV, where you will hear from artists, curators, gallery staff, collaborators, and even different hosts as you listen to each episode. This series is generously supported by a Canada Council for the Arts Digital Now grant. My name is Heng Wu, curator of Asian art at the Art Gallery of Great Victoria, and I'm your host for today. This episode was recorded and produced on the traditional lands of the Lakunga speaking people, also known as the Songhees and Esquimo Nations. In this episode, we are joined by a Canadian composer and a hostman to discuss the intersections between curating and composing that surfaced when Anna first began collaborating with the AGGV on the 2022 Reverberations exhibition. It aims to bring fresh eyes and minds to reflect on works from the AGGV's permanent collection through an intergenerational, cross-disciplinary, and cross-cultural project. Artists, makers, and creators were invited to select works from our collection that they felt a resonance to, and in turn, share their own working, bringing into conversation a diverse range of expressions. This project is an opportunity to present and share our collection in meaningful ways and to create new relationships while maintaining existing ones with focus in our community. We hope to offer our collections as a resource, as a means of bringing voices and interpretations from a range of perspectives, disciplines, and generations into the exhibition space. So among the invited artists, features Anna Hostman, our guest today. Anna composed a music piece titled For Elsa in response to Elsa Mayhew's bronze sculpture from our permanent collection titled The Bottle of Ten. Good morning, Anna. Thank you for joining me. Perhaps you would like to start us off by introducing yourself.
Good morning, Hung. Thank you. I'm really happy to be here and talking more to you about this project. Yes, my name is Anna Hostman. I actually am from the West Coast originally. I was born in Port Hardy and grew up in a little town called Bella Coola on the mainland. Recently, I've come back from living for 10 years in Toronto and really happy to be back on this beautiful West Coast island and in our city of Victoria.
Thank you for that introduction, Anna. It's so great that you are here in Victoria. Reverberations has just recently opened at the AGGV, and I know you have already had a chance to walk through the gallery space and see all of the work in person. But for listeners who are tuning into this podcast and who might not be able to see the work in person, I thought we would start off by playing a one-minute excerpt from your For Elsa composition. That was stunning. Thank you for allowing us to share it, Anna. Perhaps you would like to share a little bit about what it was like to experience the work in person in the gallery. For me, it was beautiful. I have let myself in that exhibition space several times after the opening, and every time I got such a great enjoyment. It was just beautiful. Mayhew's sculpture was right in the middle of the room, and your music was filling the room almost seamlessly, weaving itself between the spaces surrounding the sculpture. It was such a great, beautiful harmony. So I'd like to know how you felt. How did you like it?
Yes, I love it. I was there the day it opened, which was really nice and very exciting to see everything come to fruition after so much planning through weeks and weeks of going back and forth. And I found it a really moving exhibition. I love how it opens up into the community and invites people to come in and give their impressions, and how it builds relationships with artists that are outside the art gallery. Yes, I was just really touched and honored to be a part of this project, and I hope to go back again soon and see how things are doing.
Oh, great. I'm so happy to hear you say that. Yeah, for the Reverberations project, you have chosen Elsa Mayhew's Order of Ten and composed a piece for it. Mm-hmm. So first of all, maybe could you tell us a bit about your consideration behind this choice? Like, the ADDV holds a collection of over 20,000 pieces. So why Elsa Mayhew?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an interesting question because when we were first talking about this project, you invited me to have a look at the collection, and I thought, oh, okay, that, you know, I'll sort of leaf through it and something will jump out at me. And I had no idea the collection was so big. And so I was a bit overwhelmed, and I just kept sort of circling back through different things. And in fact, Elsa Mayhew did jump out at me, and there were a couple of reasons why. Firstly, I really resonated with her love for the West Coast, and that's really apparent in how she talks about the West, how she talked about the West Coast. And her sculptures themselves, although a lot of them are quite large and totemic in stature, like, for example, I've seen a couple at the university, having been a student there. Mm-hmm. I've walked by her Coast Spirit, which is in front of the library, as well as Bronze Priestess, and they're very solid and quite beautiful. It's almost like they look over the university in a way. When I saw these little sculptures of hers, I just thought, oh, these are so warm, and they're so playful, and it's almost as though they're speaking to each other, like a little conversation, almost like a little opera. Like, you immediately start to imagine this kind of dialogue they might be having with each other. Mm-hmm. And I found them very beautiful. So it kind of stimulated my imagination. And I thought, this might be something that I could respond to.
Yeah. Oh, that's very interesting to know, because the ADDV also holds some other pieces from Elsa Mayhew, like, which are quite big in size. And we are very interested to hear from you talk about, like, why exactly this piece, Border of Ten. Like, it's, I like what you have said, like, they are like in conversation, dialogue, mm-hmm. they're talking to each other. It's just like music. So, yeah.
Yes, it's interesting because I guess, I don't know that I was actually thinking about this ahead of time, mm-hmm. but in creating a relationship with another work, it's sometimes the work is so complete that as a musician, for instance, as a composer, I might not be able to find a way into it. Whereas with the Board of Ten, I suppose because the elements of it, these figures, there's so much space in between them, then I felt like it was a very active, a very textural work already. And I felt that the music had a space that could respond to it, and it could be there could be ways that I could find my own voice within it, and so that was, I think, part of the drawing to this particular piece. Okay. Because of course music is also created from elements that form relationships, and so it had a sort of connection there.
Oh, I like it. You have said it like a very beautiful way, but like when you are talking about that, I have this whole picture of a board of 10 in my mind. And that's right. Like it leaves much space for you to probably to compose, to create. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So after, like once you have chosen this piece, like you have decided to make music for this piece, like we are curious to know, like what are the following steps? Could you also share with us the whole, composing process you have worked through to make this piece?
Mm-hmm. So I think that primarily spending time with it, so having it in my space here, I came to see it at the gallery and took some video of it. And so then I had a kind of visual sense of it and had that in my space as I was writing. And a kinesthetic sense of it as well, because it's very physical, and the pieces themselves have a kind of rougher texture on the outside, but they're very dense. And so to me, that has a kind of kinesthetic presence. Mm-hmm. And so as I started composing, I was looking for ways to kind of build up the composition in layers. So I began with viola and voice and piano. And this was primarily because I thought these all worked together very well. The viola and the voice are very similar. The viola is a kind of a deeper violin, richer sounding violin, and the voice is wordless, so it's not superimposing any kind of layer of narrative over it. It's acting as an instrument as well, and then the piano is a kind of continuous repetition, like footsteps perhaps going through time. So I worked with these three primary instruments, and then I wanted to, because Elsa, when I was reading more and researching more about her philosophy and how she thought about things, she talked a lot about the human experience and her pieces as being openings into a human, humans entering and exiting. I loved this idea, and I wondered how I could do that in music more so than I was already working with in terms of the layering. And so what I thought I would do is invite further musicians to comment on what I had already created and recorded. So I sent this recording around to various musicians, and they just sort of improvised their own response, their own reverberation, if you will. And then they sent me back their recorded responses. And then I kind of chose from this little sort of catalog of improvisations and filled in a few gaps. And some of them were mostly like echoes. And so they were just kind of a further layer. So I really loved this way of opening it up to a broader community and being content with the response, but also using that material as a way to form another relationship in the work. So that was sort of my approach to creating the piece.
Yeah, you see, thank you so much for sharing this working process. But I'm just like so glad to hear you talking about your processes, which is also involving like connection with people, with the other musicians. And actually, it's really like in the echoing the working process of this whole reverberations project, like we are connecting with the different communities, different people, and through the whole working process. So I mean, I'm so glad like you point this out.
Yes, it was a really fun way to work. And it's actually not a way that I have worked before. Mm-hmm. And so this was a kind of new way of exploring composition in this particular piece, which came directly because of the idea of reverberation. So that was kind of a fun little new direction that I had taken in this work.
It's kind of reverberation, right? The whole process is a reverberations.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm also curious to know, like for this composition, for this piece you have composed, is this like can I say it's more concept oriented? Like, do you have already had a concept in your mind when you are composing?
Well, I think that I think it's fair to say that it is a kind of conceptual work. Mm-hmm. Although it's also very much a foray into sound mm-hmm. and into my response to her sculpture.
Yeah.
So it's not a piece that I would say, you know, I created a score as a concept and then it's just a kind of performance of that score. Mm-hmm. I think that the sounds themselves that I chose mm-hmm. And that I worked with and how I put the sounds together were very, very much informed by the sculpture. And that's more on a sensory level. So perhaps it's fair to say that in the end, I can sort of look back at it and think of it conceptually. Mm-hmm. But the music itself was composed from a place of response to sound.
Okay. Oh, that's good to know. But can you also talk a bit, like, has your perception about Elsa's work changed if, like, after your composition, after you compose this piece? What do you think about
that? That's an interesting question.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Has my understanding of Elsa changed because of the process of writing this piece?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I suppose creating an artwork, pardon me, is a process of spending time considering somebody or something else, an object perhaps, or a person, or an experience, or a place, a landscape. So you spend time considering and holding that object within your sights and reflecting on it. And so that is very much something that stays with you. Okay. Afterwards. Mm-hmm. So I do feel that, you know, I really loved the experience of being able to get to know her work. Mm-hmm. But it's not like I was just, it would be different if I was just sort of reading and researching about her. But when you create a work, you actually feel like you've been very attentive mm-hmm. in your own way, because of course I know very little about Elsa Mayhew, but I know a little bit more than I did before, and I feel very enriched through knowing more about her.
Oh, great. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. So next question, probably it's a layman's question because I don't really know a lot about music, but can I ask, is music narrative? For me, I would guess so. But I would like to hear from a professional like you. Do you include a narrative in your composition? Like with your composition, are you trying to telling stories or setting messages to the listeners, or just aiming at providing some beautiful treats to their ears?
Hmm. So tell me more about what you believe narrative to be for you.
Yeah, like for me, I'm a curator in working into museums. So when I'm making an exhibition, I always trying to not just put artifacts or artworks there, like for the audience to comprehend by themselves. I'm always having, for each exhibition I'm making, I'm always having something to tell the audience. There would be a big idea behind the whole curating process. Like it's a, for example, the blue and white exhibition that is still on the gallery, I'm trying to use that exhibition to tell a global story of blue and white porcelains. So mm-hmm. this narrative aspect is always in my curatorial thought or practice. So I'm interested to know, like for your composition, when you are composing some music, are you trying also having some of this storytelling aspect mm-hmm. in your creation?
As a composer, I'm really interested in particular themes, and they come back again and again in my work. One of those is nature and landscape, but okay. The sort of psychological dissonance within landscape and nature. Mm-hmm. It's just, there's sometimes disquieting aspects of our natural world. So, for example, I created a string quartet called Moths drink the tears of sleeping birds, mm-hmm. Which is this phenomenon that scientists discovered in Madagascar, where there would be, as birds sleep at night, these giant moths would settle on their eyes and they would insert little mm-hmm. Proboscis into their eyes and drink their tears. And, you know, like this kind of an image is very, it's like this kind of micro horror that goes on in nature, but it shows also how these different elements of nature work together to be able to survive. And so I'm often drawn to these kind of little places of dissonance in the natural world. And another piece that I wrote was called Skins Dissolving. And this was a site-specific piece for Amplified Flute Choir. And it was done within the BD Biodiversity Museum, which is in Vancouver. And they were having an exhibit called Skin and Bones. And it was looking at our complicated relationship with the animal world. Mm-hmm. So I find this a really interesting place. And it often informs the kinds of pieces that I'll write and the kinds of material that I'll work with in composition. So I suppose in a way that is my own personal narrative that then comes into my work, into the things I'm interested in. And so I would, in that way, I would definitely say that's where I find meaning within my own work, is through researching these types of things.
Okay, that's interesting to know. My next question, maybe it's also related to the previous one, but like in the museum field, when we are making exhibitions or developing programs, like audience is always in the center of our minds. So I'm also curious to know that, do you have a target audience in your mind when you are composing? Is it more like you are telling something, sending the message to the audience, or it's more about expressing yourself with your music?
I guess in a way, I feel that if I am interested in something, other people might be interested in it as well. I don't target things to specific audiences. Mm-hmm. So I suppose it's more that I allow myself to follow my interests mm-hmm. in what I want to compose. Yeah. And I feel that audiences are very intelligent and well sort of educated. And, if they don't like the music, they might still be interested in the idea behind the music. Or if they do like the music, then that's wonderful. But like I'm not trying to write something that people would specifically like, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So I think in that way, there's a kind of freedom to write in a direction that I feel is interesting for myself. Okay. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does, because I think I totally agree. Even for us, when we are making exhibitions, we're not trying to really to just think to feed something that the people really want. Like mm-hmm. still there are some serious knowledge or scholarship aspects associated with the exhibitions. So I think I'm speaking from the museum field, from the curating side. What we are trying to do is just to try to provide provide the facilities for the audience to best enjoy or appreciate the final work, either the exhibition or the presentation of the mm-hmm. works of art. So I totally agree with what you have just said about mm-hmm. audience. But then I also want to know specifically for this time's composition, what is your expectation for the audience? What is your expectation for the audience who comes to the gallery to listen to your music while viewing the Board of Ten? Do you have any expectations for them, or you totally leave it open to them to?
Well, I love that it is in the lab, because I think it's a beautiful space, and it is very evocative. The color is very evocative within mm-hmm. that space. I love how you come up the little walkway and then you can peer into the room through the clear glass. Yeah. And you look at this, it in a certain way, it almost reminds me of a chess game or something. You know, like is it a game? You know, it kind of has that sort of that game-like quality. And then I hope that people will come in and engage and with the sculptures and try to, feel what they're feeling when they see them and mm-hmm. as they're hearing the music, and that it'll be an experience that is unique for them, that they might not be able to connect to anything else that they've ever seen or heard before, or maybe they will make connections with something. Mm-hmm. I hope that they'll discover more of Elsa's work as a result. Just enjoy it.
That's very,
absolutely.
Yeah, speaking of that, because this piece and your music is presented in our lab. We call it a lab, like a small exhibition space. But we did have take off the vinyl on the gate. So like you said, so the audience came to, like even they stand out of the gallery, they can see through the clear glass door to see the piece. So this is a way we have made to invite the audience in. So
It's very nice. It's like this little box that you're looking into, like this little theater or something, and you're just peering through into the theater.
Okay, so how do you think about this collaboration with the AGGV? Do you think this through this collaboration, or should I? Do you think the collaboration with the AGGV this time would impose any influence on your future composition practice?
Oh my goodness! Do you mean will it influence the next pieces that I write in some sort of way?
Normally you are working on this music is, we call this like an art for the ear, right? But this time you are collaborating with the art gallery and you are more into this visual side. So I would guess like probably also have included this visual aspect in your working when you were composing. So I'm just curious to know what are these times of work had where it have any influence or anything for your future composition practice?
Well, I definitely love to work again with visual art in some way. I did I created an orchestra piece based on Emily Carr's paintings. Four of Emily Carr's paintings: Spring, Pine Trees and Blue Sky, Scorned as Timber, Beloved of the Sky, and Untitled Seascape. The last two are from 1935. And I loved that process as well. It was very similar where I was just trying to kind of resonate with the work and then come up with a kind of musical corollary or relationship, or just explore my feelings in having those paintings and seeing those paintings and experiencing those paintings. Mm-hmm. And so that piece and this process is sort of similar, and it would be interesting to go forward and work that way again. I find it very enriching, and it also every time something new is brought into the composition process, it changes you. It changes it asks questions. It creates a little challenge. It creates a little problem. Mm-hmm. And your process is, finding the answer to that challenge or that problem. And so you develop a new set of skills to try to kind of solve that and create something meaningful. So, I look forward to pieces that kind of are like that kind of create that that set of relationships that ask new questions, basically.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you. So then, so what works have you been working on recently? I think our audience probably want to know more about your composition.
Sure, yeah. So one piece that I'm really excited about is, and this has been a piece I've been working on for several years, actually all through COVID, is an opera called Cells of Wind. Okay. And this is finally coming to its workshop stage this July in Toronto. It's just an hour-long piece, but it's based on a theater artist by the name of Lena Constant, who was a Romanian theater artist. Mm-hmm. And she lived in the 20th century as well. She was unfortunately confined to prison because she went through some puppet trials of Stalin, basically. She hadn't done anything wrong, but mm-hmm. she still knew somebody who was on the wrong side of the political community. And so she was confined to prison and was in solitary confinement for nearly a decade. And so I've created this opera with Fawn Chamber Collective, which is an experimental opera group in Toronto. It's for 6 instrumentalists and 8 singers. And talking about a piece that sort of that creates a problem and then stimulates you to do a new kind of form of, I guess, score in this case, the whole score is graphically notated. So there's no actual specific pitches. But I used this idea of her as a theater artist and her delight in creating set design mm-hmm. and in creating tapestries. And so the score basically is a grid. And then across it are all of these different sort of visual designs that come out of her tapestry work. And so that will be a really neat project to kind of hear eventually and see how it sounds.
Yeah, we look forward to it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's, I'm just working on parts for that right now. It's taking a very long
very
time.
Very busy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I think I also want to hear from you, like before this collaboration, do you know a lot about ADGV? Like, what is your idea, should I say, about the ADGV?
Yeah, I mean, I have had a growing, I suppose, interest in the ADGV in the mm-hmm. last little while because of this project.
Yeah.
And I had visited there a couple of times.
Okay.
Well, I had been there to see the Emily Carr collection, and then a few exhibits that came through that I thought were really interesting. Mm-hmm. But in the last, of course, I've only been back in Victoria for the last 3.5 years, and not much was happening because of COVID-19, and so I haven't really been there at all. But yeah, I'm really excited by this exhibit and. Also by the podcast and by different community endeavors that the AGGV seems to be involved with. So I think it's really exciting.
Thank you. For those who want to learn more about Anna's work, head over to annahostman.net. And for more information on the AGGV's Reverberations exhibition, please visit aggv.ca. Thank you all for listening. Thank you. Thank you, Anna.
Bye.
Bye.